I would say just go do it. Don't be afraid. If you want to do it, go do it. I mean, we need more good financial planners. I think like people like you and me, it's really great that we can do these podcasts and help educate people. But the reality is, even like in the minority groups, we need more minority people in the financial planning industry. And there's huge opportunity.
Welcome, my friend, to the Conversations for Financial Professionals podcast. I'm your host, Dominique Henderson. And as a veteran of the financial services industry, I was curious to find out why, despite all the good that financial professionals do, that the term financial advisor would normally clear the room at a dinner party. Why was this? And what was this gap between consumers and providers of financial services? In this podcast, I seek to close this gap by having forward-moving conversations to advance the profession of giving financial advice and providing tools to the next generation of financial professionals to serve their clients at the highest level. As providers, we have the awesome privilege of partnering with our future clients to help change family trees, normalize the creation of wealth, and help the industry as a whole do less harm and more good. In today's conversation, we speak with Miss Brittany Castro. Brittany, a favorite of most of anybody that has been looking at financial services as a career or inside this industry for the last decade or so. She is the founder and CEO of Financially Wise, Los Angeles-based financial and education media hub. If you've been following financial services for a while, you know Brittany, you know her brand. She's done an excellent job. And so I wanted to know how it all began for her and what this journey in financial services has been and what she thinks is going to be for her in the future. We then go into the checklist of finding opportunities. From topics of fee compression to fee consolidation and the whole fee-only discussion, you name it, we talked about trends from A to Z in the financial services industry. We also talked about Brittany's suggested checklist for creating media opportunities and the things she thinks financial professionals should be thinking about and doing and what they should be avoiding. So many nuggets of wisdom in this conversation. So without further ado, it's time to sit back and enjoy the conversation. Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are shaping the next generation of financial advice. And today we have Miss Brittany Castro. Brittany, you are the founder and CEO of Financially Wise, Inc., a Los Angeles-based financial education and media company whose mission is to teach individuals and couples the art of managing their finances in a thoughtful and proactive way. You're also a certified financial planner, chartered retirement planning counselor, accredited asset management specialist, entrepreneur, highly sought after speaker, and consultant. The key to Financial Wise's Inc.'s success can be attributed to your simple yet highly effective method of approaching finance in a fun, personalized, compassionate, relatable, and non-judgmental way. I love that. Since 2013, Financially Wise has offered services ranging from fee-only financial and investment planning, online money courses, and financial wellness workshops to speaking engagements and brand partnerships. You are a noted financial expert and go-to resource for national media outlets and platforms, including CNN, CNBC, The Wall Street Journal, New York Times, and the list goes on. You have been elected one of the 40 under 40 in 2020 by Investment News, as one of the 22 women to watch by Investment News in 2018, and was ranked on Investopedia's top influential financial advisors list in 2017, 2018, 2019, and 2020. Additionally, you serve as the in-house CFP for Mint, as well as the head of education for Altruist, both roles where you can continue your efforts of spreading financial literacy to the masses through media interviews, video content, and social campaigns. And away from the office, you can be found meditating, traveling, exploring, and of course, dancing. Welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. This is kind of a long time coming. And as we were kind of chopping it up in the digital green room beforehand, I was saying this is my first time meeting you. So it's a pleasure.
Yes, I know. It's so funny because I feel like I know you, but we don't really know each other.
That's kind of how social media works, right? It's the
that's
new.
How it goes. That's really how it goes.
Yeah, it's the I call it the new Starbucks of this age. I'm a little older than most, so I remember the time where you used to actually go to Starbucks and drink like coffee over, you know, with somebody and something.
Back in the day, those were the days.
Well, good stuff. I am. I'm really eager to break down this topic of finding media opportunities as a financial professional. You know, there's a lot of models and all kinds of different ways to, you know, do your thing as a financial professional nowadays. It used to be the really button up, astute, you know, mahogany desk, stale, pale and male type of thing. But it's changed so much now. And I think you're at the forefront of that. So I love what you're doing. I love the approach. And I just really want you to share some of those insights with the audience. But let's start with how it began for Brittany. Like, talk about this evolution. Absolutely. Because you were one of the pioneers.
I was one of the OGs, yeah. But I remember those mahogany desks, and that's probably why I started my own company. So my brief story is I got a degree in business economics, had no idea what financial advising was, what the career was. I just knew early when I was young, I wanted to have a business. That was always like a dream of mine. And so when I graduated college, I got a job offer for a financial advisor. I took the job, was at the first company for like 5 years. And I think that was the perfect time because I was able to get a lot of training. Like, we had classes every morning to teach us sales, marketing, financial planning, how to work with clients, how to actually develop a plan, like even business mindset training. And I think because of the structure of that first company and even like working certain hours and having a model week and things you did at every day, like every hour of the day, it was so valuable. So I did really well, built my book of business doing financial planning. And I also learned I was not cut out for this model. Like, I wasn't going to be the person who could stay in this type of model long term. I just had a lot of my own ideas. And, you know, I would go to these events and conferences where I would win like top producer, and I would show up and I was literally like, you know, standing out like a sore thumb, this young girl, half Latina, you know, with a field of older white men, because that's what majority of the financial industry is. So I kind of just saw the opportunity, left that company, went to an independent company, LPL, where I started to brand myself. That was in 2010. I got my CFP designation. There was a few advisors like the Jeff Rose era who were like financial advisors using social media. I think there was like two people, him, he was one. And there was another one, Kathy Curtis. I don't know if you know her, but those were the two people I actually like found a way to connect with them and ask them, like, I want to do media. I want to do marketing online. I kind of want to be the next Susie Orman. How are you finding ways to do this through compliance? And they just kind of told me their workarounds. And then I would work, you know, with the back office compliance team and tell them why they needed to approve my tweet or why they needed to get my YouTube channel approved. And I just found a way. Like, they would tell me no, and I would say, no, you don't understand. It's the same thing as teaching workshops. I'm just doing it online. And so after like 2.5 years rebuilding my book of business and kind of like taking all these branding workshops and business planning, I left that independent company and started this company now, Financially Wise Inc., and was doing financial planning for a long time, RIA, and brand partnerships. So from like day one, 2013, I was always hired as like a spokesperson or consultant to help create content for other brands. And I really liked that. Like, I was thinking, and this is what I like had a vision of. I didn't know really how it would work. But once I started, I realized, oh, this is like my sweet spot where I can deliver financial advice, be the host or expert in these media interviews or on the video content, and develop my own skills further and leverage that to bring more clients to the company. Since then, last year, I was able to sell the client portion of my company. So I now refer all individual client work to another firm and have an arrangement set up with that firm. I'm not in client meetings anymore. And now I could focus full-time on brand partnerships, speaking, online courses, which was always part of my vision. So I'm actually very excited to be here now in the journey, because I think sometimes, as you know, you work so hard and you have to take so many pivots along the way and twists and turns and all the things of being an entrepreneur, and to realize, oh, it all kind of worked out. It feels really nice.
No. I'm glad you shared that. I think there's so many nuggets. As my audience knows, I like to say, which rabbit trail do I want to hop down? You've given me so many. I think, you know, one of the things that strikes me on your story and from what I followed and read is that this notion around there was a status quo, as there is in most industries. I don't think, you know, financial services has, you know, like the franchise on that or anything. But you knocked against the door until, you know, whether it was compliance or sticking out like a sore thumb or whatever, you just said, I'm going to make a way. So I want to borrow a phrase from Shane Parrish. Like, I want to double click on that, because there's a lot of career changers, aspiring financial professionals that'll be listening to this. And they're like, oh, well, you know, I got this and I got that and I got this. Talk about maybe what instilled in you this resilience and this perseverance just to kind of push through.
I don't really know where my drive comes from. I think that's just in my DNA. Like, I started working when I was 16 and I was a waitress, and it was because my parents said, look, you know, I grew up in a middle-class family, and I'm very amazed at what my family was able to give us, given a one-income household. But they always told us, look, if you want more, go work. So I just knew if I wanted more, go work. And I became a waitress, and I learned how to connect with people. And I learned the more I connected with people, the bigger my tips would be. So I think that was like a very first good learning lesson in like work and bringing value, connection, and that's how I would receive money. And so along the way, like when I left that first company to the independent one, I was like 26 years old, I think, had like 4.5 years under my belt. I was had no clue what I was doing, right? I just took this huge leap, and I remember for like 6 months, I was like studying for my CFP, and I knew I was going to leave on this certain date. And I don't know if it's still like this, but back then it was like, you can't tell your firm because there's this whole thing, like you have to leave on a Friday. So then you could call all your clients on a Saturday and try to get them to come with you. It's like a whole weird compliance workaround. But I remember being so nervous and probably anxious because no one in my family was really entrepreneurial. So I was like taking all these leaps of faith and thinking, I have no clue what I'm doing, but I'm going to do it. So I think for career changers or anybody who was just interested in this industry, you have to just try, because you don't know until you fully dive in. And I think that's one of my skill sets. When I decide on something, I go all in. I don't know if that's, you know, now I'm older, so I learn how to balance a little bit, but I think there is such a good quality about that. Like, if you're going to go all in, because you're not going to know fully if you like it, if you're good at it, if you're like half committed, half doing the work. So I think that was just part of it. Like, even though there was fear or maybe the who knows what the path is, that unknown, I was willing to take that risk to make the move, because I knew for myself, something in me, I can't live like a stagnant life. Like, I'm always in pursuit of personal growth and evolution. And I think that's really important to me. So I always think like, well, even if I fail, I'd rather try and fail than not try at all. Like, no. That's just kind of the way I choose to live.
No, you remind me of something. So before I started my company 5 years ago, there's a guy I worked for, and he used to have this saying all the time. And I was like, what are you talking about, dude? He's like, I'm a ready, fire, aim guy. And I'm like, that's the wrong way to think about that. But when you said that statement, I just thought, I was like, that is very entrepreneurial. You cannot test everything. You have to be able to pivot. You have to adapt. You have to iterate. And sometimes it won't be perfect. You just have to ship. you've got to ship stuff, and like people are not waiting for you to make it perfect and tweak it on this end. So I love what you said about that. Talk about the what your version of, I guess, or what you would call transferable skill set. You said something about when you were waitressing at 16 that the more you connected with people and you provided value, the bigger your tips were. And this is a transferable skill that you take, you know, in this part of life and move it to this part of life, in this industry, move it to this industry. Talk about maybe some other transferable skills that you know that people have when they're looking at, hey, I'm going to move from whatever they were doing into financial services, and some tips that you may have for them in doing that.
Yeah. One other tip I would have is, like, other than it's such a relationship-based business, is to focus on marketing. I think from day one, I had this really amazing manager, Marcus Ranger, shout out. He would always tell me, like, always market, because you can be the best financial advisor in the world, but if you're not marketing yourself, nobody knows. Like, nobody can find you. It doesn't really matter. So you need clients. And that was instilled in me at early in my career to always market. So I think other skill sets that are very valuable in this industry is learning how to market. And it doesn't mean you have to be salesy and slimy. You know, I just put on LinkedIn today, like, I'm so amazed at how many messages I get that are like these cold emails selling me a product that have nothing to do with my industry. I'm like, what a waste of time and money and energy. Like, I really don't understand this sales cycle. I know there is an aspect of my, yeah, I'm sure some of that works, but I'm like, wow, marketing is so like relationship based now more than ever. So if you can really find a way to leverage connecting with people, because from day one in my career, I had to hustle to get clients. I didn't have like a paycheck. So one way I did that was having lunch and learns. That's what we called them, where I would sponsor lunches, teach them a financial topic, get their contact information, follow up with them to get a meeting, to then hopefully get them as a client. And I feel like nowadays I do that, but it's just in a social media world. So I deliver a lot of value, post all the time, build a little rapport, and then eventually, like, you know, share about the services or products, and it's that sales cycle. But I think learning that in the financial world, because you could be really good at finance, but if you don't know how to market, you're not going to make it.
No, I love that. Yeah, there's definitely support, operational, compliance type roles. But, mostly when people talk about this industry, they talk about the client-facing type of stuff. And I totally agree with you. It reminds me of the jab, 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 right hook from Gary Vee,
yeah,
where he's like, you have to be able to demonstrate the value. And you may not be selling all the time, but if you're telling a good story, if you're, you know, telling, you know, in connecting rather with your audience, with your ideal audience, I think that's all that stuff is key. I wonder, so as we kind of like pivot a little bit, because to me, you are, I don't know, like I would say you're like kind of the queen of this, these media opportunities. You, like, you see your face everywhere with, you know, brand partnerships, and obviously read some of this stuff in the bio. Talk about the process. Now, I think some of this stuff you've already kind of laid the foundation for, so let's just layer on that. Like, you've got to be able to be comfortable enough in your own skin. You've got to develop relationships. What are some more, as we're ascending up the stairs, if you will, of how this would be done? What does Brittany say about that?
Well, specifically, I would say I've been in this kind of work for about, let's say about 8-10 years now, where I do brand and speaking partnerships. So I've done media training, like at some point, you know, these companies have hired media training for me, where I learned a little bit more of a skill set around, like, if it's a format of talking to the just direct camera or having an interview or interviewing somebody, you know, so there's a different version, right, in every type of video format. And a lot of it is just experience. I think with experience, you get to watch yourself, what you do well, what you don't do well. I still say a lot of and oh, you know, and it's funny because I'll watch and critique myself, but also I have a great group of family and friends who will give me critiques as well, which I love. And they've helped me a lot along the way. They've called me out if it's being too fake or if it's they don't really like it or something's not hitting right. They'll give me ideas. So I think my inner circle is often a good advisory board for me with my content. But I would say if you are interested, and actually I feel like everybody who is either the CEO or the face of the company needs to be interested in video marketing right now.
Why do you say that? I was going to ask you about trends in this industry, but go ahead. You're going there. Go ahead. Talk about video.
Well, this is such the way of the world right now, especially with the pandemic. We all went to, you know, online social media to connect. And that's why TikTok and Instagram Reels are just like so hot right now. So I think companies need to embrace it, and you find somebody, if it's not you in your organization, or hire somebody who will be the face of the company. I mean, that's what I do for other companies, right? They hire me to be the face. So find somebody who's going to be personable on screen, who wants to be on screen. I think it is a wanting to be on camera and videos, and it's also then developing those skills just through experience. But it would be foolish to not dive into video marketing. I mean, we've been preaching this for years, but especially now, everybody is watching video marketing. Instagram is only promoting videos. Like, they only promote reels in their algorithms. So even me, I'm thinking, okay, if you've noticed, my content has gotten a lot more reels on Instagram over the last month or two, because when I kind of took a break, like a hiatus for a year, and when I came back, I thought, oh, the algorithm doesn't even support static posts that much, so why are we wasting all this time creating static images when Instagram is only going to show my reels? So you have to be able to adapt and pivot, and there's a lot of creative ways to make reels and videos that would be authentic to your organization, your brand, your specific services. And you can't use that excuse of, oh, we work with older clients. Okay, no, everybody is on social media. My parents all the time send me social media, you know? So it's every demographic is on social media, from the young teens to the older retirees. There's no excuse.
No, you're preaching and you're making me feel convicted, because I, with my team, I'm thinking about, yeah, you know, I'm a little lazy on the reels. But when I think about what me and my wife of 24 years share between each other, it's reels.
It's reels.
All the time.
It's funny, right? I mean, I even do. I make my own, like, personal funny ones for my family and friends. They're not business related, so I don't post them. But I think it's so hilarious. I go on TikTok and reels. I'm like, man, these videos nail it. They're the relatability.
Yeah. You're right. What's the first step in becoming a successful financial professional? Well, doing your homework. And there's no better place to understand the financial services industry than Jumpstart University. With video after video of hours and hours of content on topics like the different careers available in financial services, advice for making the switch as a career changer, what to consider when becoming an independent financial professional, how to attract and retain new clients, what's involved in becoming a certified financial planner, and day in the life of a financial advisor, with so much more. All of this for free. You just got to click through the YouTube ads. So head on over to YouTube now to check out Jumpstart YO University. You can find that at youtube.com/JumpstartYOUniversity. Now, let's get back to the conversation. You're right. It's almost kind of like a slap on the wrist, dummy. You got to do better, because, you know, you're affirming something that I think resonates with a lot of people. And when we think about themes, though, in this industry, I think about the old guard, like we talked about a little while ago, and, you know, the advisor that we don't, you know, we want to see our, you know, our people in person. We deliver this kind of, you know, bespoke service, whatever. But people weren't coming in your office the last 18, 24 months. It just wasn't happening. And the ability to pivot. I want you to talk about that for a little bit because, you know, one of the things that I talk about with people inside my community is that as a career changer, as an aspiring financial professional, you're starting from scratch. Like, this is a skill set you don't really know. You need to be a sponge. You need to be finding mentors and people to look up to because of everything that needs to be deposited in you so you can show up for your ideal client. And obviously media is one of those ways, but if you are that advisor that, you know, I don't want to call him a dinosaur, but that person is like, I'm not really good for video. What are some other ways that you may pivot into this space if you don't want to do video?
Yeah, if you don't want to do video, I would just say still have a very strong website presence. Like if you go to your website, it's very clear who you are, what you do, who you serve. It's easy to schedule a call. You should have pictures of you. You should tell your story. Why did you become a financial advisor? What was that motivation to get started? So story tell, make it visual, and make your website very strong. And you can do written content after that and drive people to your website. But if you're really not wanting to do video, I think that's okay. There's a lot of outlets who will ask me to write articles for them. I'm like, you know, it's not really a good use of my time. Like, I can write articles for you, but my skill set's in video. Why don't we do Instagram Lives? Why don't we do webinars? I'd rather be a video. But there's publications all day long who are looking for written content, articles, financial advice columns. So you can just go that angle of content creation. But I think ultimately the idea is always to drive them back to your website, right? To capture the lead. Because yes, while these social media platforms are around now and probably around for a few more years, who really knows? Eventually it's going to change to something else. So the website and your database of contacts of leads is ultimately your gold. It doesn't matter how many followers you have. If you don't have their name and email, what happens if his Instagram goes belly up tomorrow, which we actually, you remember that week where it was down yeah, for a good half point. Day and I was like, oh, it's happening. I'm predicting.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, okay, interesting. If this is not a little gentle reminder that these things change and evolve, but ultimately business is business and a person and their information is the same way back when as it is today. It's still the person, you know, that ultimately matters.
Yeah, I want to bring up 2 points. You said something about this, you know, social media is great. And yeah, great. You have, you know, 10,000 followers. How much of them are engaged? How many of them do you have their email and contact information? Janelle O'Ryan brought up a great point about having as kind of your foundation. If you're like pouring cement and building the skyscraper, you're thinking about your CRM, right? You're thinking about your database of names, emails, maybe even phone numbers at some point that you then start to. And here's the second thing I want to bring up and have you chime in on, you know, starting a niche, right? Like, who are you trying to target? Who are you called to? What is the purpose for you standing up and, you know, blurting from IGTV or whatever platform you're on? What is the purpose for that? I wonder if you could touch on that for a second about creating value inside of a niche, even in something as broad as financial services, because I know I see people do it all the time, and I believe you've done it too pretty well also.
So here's my opinion, and it's changed throughout the years on niches. When I first started my company, I niched myself as the financial planner for women. I needed to build a brand. I needed to build reputation in the industry. And this was the way I did it. And it worked out well. A few years ago, I realized I'm missing an opportunity because a lot of my content is talking to the mass market, general market. And although I love helping women with their money, I still worked with a lot of couples. I really like men too. I didn't want to, you know, just say no, only women. So then I kind of changed it. So it was general market, because I felt that was like the next brand evolution and expansion for my company. And that's kind of where I'm at today. However, I still think there's specific niches you can leverage as like maybe the more passionate conversations you have, but also, and that worked out really well for me, but eventually you're going to want to keep expanding. So I think staying in a niche after you've built your initial reputation and momentum may be holding you back. And that's what I found for myself. And it was interesting. I was just on a coaching, a virtual seminar this weekend, and he was saying something similar, like niches can actually be bad for you. But I think in the beginning you need to, right? Like you need to know who this product or service is for. Why are you different? Who are you specifically helping? Build your credibility and then expand and evolve from there.
I think you bring up a good point, and I don't disagree with you at all. Actually, you just said it out loud, something that was in my head, is because first of all, in financial services, I think we're kind of unique in this industry, and where, you know, the deep pockets, right? The people that spend billions of dollars on marketing every year, the big firms, they do a really good job of making us all look like the same gallon of milk, right? So if you come to the table with that narrative, or with, you know, your prospective client already having that conditioning, then they're like, why should I work with you versus Brittany or versus, you know, the guy down the street at Edward Jones? Like, they don't know the difference unless you come in and say, this is how I can specifically help you. So I think I agree with you. And then to the standpoint of once you've built some reputational capital or however your deal goes, or some bandwidth, then you can start to say, okay, I like to serve these people, and I know that there's going to be a ceiling on what I can do if I continue down that way, or you decide to pivot. And so I think there's so many different ways to pivot. I was just in FinCon in September, and there's a lot of different ways to, you know, help with financial services. Let's put it that way. So I think that's the sky's the limit in that regard. So as we bring this thing in for a landing, you've done a lot of things. I wonder where you see the industry going in the next 5 to 10 years. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I do see this new version that I started in 2013, this virtual being the way, right? We're not going back to offices, maybe part-time, one-third of the time. But having this disruption of location definitely is going to sustain, meaning if you're a financial planner advisor not giving quality service, guess what? Your competition just got that much harder, because now people are going to look across the U.S. to find somebody who will give them the right service and who is a good fit for them. So I think that is one. I also think the second one is just being more transparent with the fees. We've seen robo-advisors for years now. I felt like that's like where I like started, right? That was like when I was starting this company, that was like the start of robo-advisor platform. So no longer is your value, nor should it have ever been, related to your investment management for clients. It's not about that. They can go get their investment accounts managed for a fraction of the cost. And we've seen it recently with 11 million accounts opened up last year, 11 million brokerage accounts alone opened up last year. So people are opening up on Robinhood, all these apps, doing it themselves. They don't equate financial advisors with investment help anymore. Actually, they really want that separation. So you need to make sure your value is clearly articulated in helping them maneuver this world of so many options, so many products, helping them get the right system set up, coaching them so they sustain on this path, help them make the right decisions, avoid making bad decisions. It's not about managing their account or selling them the dang life insurance product. They can go do it themselves. And we're only going to see more disruption of those industries. I mean, even I'm talking to someone in the estate planning world tomorrow, like a fintech company disrupting estate planning, because no longer do people want to go to this attorney who's going to charge them thousands and I don't know, it's overwhelming. Maybe they can just do it more online. It's a fraction of the cost. They have a professional attorney helping them, but it's not like the model that has been you know, so far. So I think those two things, like making sure you're aware of there's going to be a lot more competition, not to scare you, but there should then in your mind think like, oh, there's more opportunity for me to go get new clients because a lot of clients are going to be looking to move advisors. And then if you're able to just be very transparent, which you should be, about your fees and your service model, then there should never be an issue about how you're charging your people, because you know your value comes from so much more, not just selling them the product or getting their investment account set up.
No, two paradigm shifts that I think are already in play and will continue to, you know, kind of pan out, as you said. I think, you know, we have to reimagine this role because the consumer is always ahead of the industry and they are demanding this. I like how you said coach, like whether you actually go decide to get coaching skills or some type of designation, that is definitely the seat that most people want me sitting in, at least, is, and I say this all the time, I'm like, you got limited time and money. Financial planning is nothing more, or financial advice is nothing more than how do I take that limited time and money against unlimited options? Because there's just information overload now, and your clients need you to come and simplify things. My value is definitely not in if I can beat the S&P. Like, I can really care less. So I love it. The purpose of this podcast is to empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools to serve their ideal client at the next level. And with that, Brittany, what word or words of wisdom would you leave with them?
Wow, so much pressure. I would say just go do it. Don't be afraid. If you want to do it, go do it. I mean, we need more good financial planners. I think like people like you and me, it's really great that we can do these podcasts and help educate people. But the reality is, even like in the minority groups, we need more minority people in the financial planning industry. And there's huge opportunity. Like, I think, wow, this is so great that now there's so much more awareness around this aspect. I just looked at the CFP numbers the other day. It's like still less than, I don't know, I think it's like less than 3% of CFPs are Hispanic. So I was thinking, wow, there's just a huge opportunity to educate more people about this career as an option, because you can make money, you can help people, you can have potentially a flexible schedule. And these are all the things we want, especially in this new era of society, of the workplace.
Yes. The great resignation. Yes.
Yeah, the great resignation. So if you want it, make it happen. And there's people and resources who would be willing to help you if you just, you know, put in the work.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jumpstart is one of those. I know you do tons of, you're all over social media. We'll link everything down in the show notes. You speak, you educate, and all people have to do is reach out and get a hold of you, just like I did, because I'm pretty sure you will get back with it.
So, hey, I'm pretty good at getting back to people.
No, you are.
Well, I like connecting with people, even like on the DMs. Like, I have someone help me manage all the social media, but I like direct messaging people back. I think that's like the beauty of our industry is you get to connect with people all over the world, really.
Yeah. This has been great. I love the fact that you stopped by to deposit into the community, into the audience on this platform. And I wish you nothing but the best. Great to meet you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Really, it's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Take care, Brittany.
Bye.
I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. You first might want to write down your most important takeaway and then give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. And remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to learn more about how Jumpstart can help you become a next generation financial professional, or partner with you in finding next generation talent for your organization, send us an email at hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com, just in case you needed to get a pen to write that down. That's hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com. Bye for now, until our next conversation.